2 weeks' notice. Part 3. At first, Merlin didn't say anything about the few extra errands added to his usual list of duties. There was the crate of organic green tea shipped directly from China, and probably grown in Taiwan, that he had to pick up at the docks. Then the complete library of vegan cookbooks, not printed on recycled paper, of course, that he had to gather from various bookstores downtown, and the bamboo and hemp robe, which was surprisingly warm and soft, actually, that he had to pick up from the speciality shop on the other side of London. But Merlin drew the line when Arthur sent him out over his lunch break to get the designer faux leather watch Arthur had especially commissioned from Armani. "I'm pretty sure giving me presents doesn't work if you send me out to pick them up myself," Merlin pointed out, voice steeped in frustration. "And just for the record, it sort of defeats the purpose of giving me eco-friendly gifts if I have to waste petrol driving all over London to get them." Arthur looked bemused. "Then I'll buy you a Prius." Merlin threw the watch box at Arthur's head. Merlin glared at the cup in Arthur's hand as if it contained battery acid, or possibly the blood of helpless kittens. Arthur stood his ground, but when Merlin turned his glare on Arthur, he winced. "Look, I didn't think the bloody thing would be so impossible to operate. You do it every day and you're an idiot." Merlin's glare intensified and Arthur reevaluated his word choice. This was what he got for trying to do something nice, like make Merlin's morning coffee. Arthur thought of the noise the coffee machine had made as it died, sounding an awful lot like the horrible death rattle of a beast who had its plans for world domination foiled, and said, "If you ask me, we're all better off this way. That thing was bound to take over the world eventually." Arthur raised a hand to rub over his forehead, just to check that Merlin wasn't burning a hole into his skull with the laser-like power of his glare. Merlin looked as if he wouldn't mind living under a fascist dictatorship ruled by machines if it just meant he got to have coffee. "Starbucks isn't even organic," Merlin muttered darkly. Arthur stubbornly didn't retract the steaming cup. "It's this or nothing," he said. Merlin's fury began to visibly waver. After a long beat, he reached out and took the cup from Arthur's hand. Arthur only dared to linger a moment. He wasn't totally convinced Merlin wasn't planning to dump it over Arthur's head. He turned to head back into his office and he heard Merlin call after him. "Did you at least..." "Yes, I remembered the soy milk," Arthur replied, not turning round. Once he reached his desk, he hazarded a surreptitious glance over his shoulder to see Merlin staring morosely at the cup cradled between his palms. After a lengthy contemplation, one hand moved the cup towards the trash bin before it stopped, hovering precariously for several seconds. Then Merlin brought the cup back and resolutely lifted it to his lips. The mammoth coffee machine was well and truly dead, but Arthur made sure there was a coffee sitting on Merlin's desk every morning. The first time they'd gone out to lunch together in months was when Arthur forcefully dragged Merlin out onto the streets of downtown London. He had apparently planned the whole thing, complete with a vegan wrap for Merlin and a steak sandwich for himself. The weather was overcast and threatening rain, but Arthur insisted they walk along the Thames as they ate. It was all so terribly thoughtful, and something that might even be called sweet, if coming from anyone but Arthur, that Merlin kept wondering if he needed to run home and check for a pod under Arthur's bed. Conversation was stilted and tense, and full of the painfully polite small talk usually found only on first dates. And the whole thing inexplicably felt like a first date. There was one horridly awkward moment where Merlin caught Arthur staring thoughtfully out over the water, breeze gently ruffling his hair, and all Merlin wanted to do was reach out and hold Arthur's hand. And it all just reminded him of why he was leaving in the first place. "Arthur?" Merlin said quietly, interrupting Arthur's rant about some muck-up in the accounting department. It's not that I don't appreciate the effort. I do, but I'm not changing my mind. Arthur's expression shut down to the carefully blank look he'd cultivated for difficult financial negotiations, and his knuckles were white on the railing at the water's edge. Why not? Merlin just stood next to him on the walkway, silently gazing at the same nebulous point in the distance that seemed to have fixated Arthur, and thought desperately, oh, because I can't have you, and it's time I moved on. When it seemed apparent that Merlin wasn't going to answer, Arthur said curtly, fine. And then, because he couldn't seem to resist, he added, but really? Well? A rueful smile tugged at Merlin's lips and he shrugged, saying simply, it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Arthur's voice was unnecessarily harsh as he said, he only wants you because you're mine. Merlin's anger flared, sharp and hot. I'm not some toy you can refuse to share with the other school kids, he replied fiercely. Arthur's hands twisted as if trying to wrench the metal railing in his grasp, but his chin dropped to his chest and he said softly, I know that, Merlin, just please. The request tore Merlin in two directions at once. A part of him, a very strong part, wanted nothing more than to give it another shot, to try and pretend that every day by Arthur's side, so close but just out of reach, watching him waste his potential to be something more, wasn't slowly breaking his heart. The other part, the part Merlin was just starting to listen to, kept telling him to get out while he still could, to find his own happiness separate from Arthur's. Merlin stared hard at Arthur until finally Arthur dared to look up and meet Merlin's eyes. Merlin wasn't sure what he was expecting to see, but he knew at once that even if he had no intention of going back to work for Arthur, he couldn't take that job with Will. Not if it meant hurting Arthur. Okay, he said. But that's the last thing you get to ask of me. I'm still leaving tomorrow, so don't ask me to stay, Merlin stated. Then added to himself, because I don't think I'm strong enough to tell you no. The only sign of Arthur's relief was an almost imperceptible loosening of his features. Their gazes held for a good long while until finally a strange look flickered across Arthur's face and he said, when this is all over, after tomorrow I mean, do you think we could... Arthur's question was cut off when his phone rang. Merlin determinedly quashed the hope that had sparked in his chest and made his heart flutter against his ribs. Because surely Arthur hadn't been about to ask what Merlin was hoping he would. The phone rang again. It was the tone especially assigned to calls from Arthur's father, but even so, Arthur hesitated a moment before reaching into his pocket. He answered with a curt greeting, suddenly all business. He listened for a few minutes, nodding in a way that Merlin doubted he even knew he was doing, and then agreed to head back to the office right away before ending the call. Don't tell me, Merlin said. Urgent business? Afraid so, Arthur agreed with a half smile. Looks like we'll have to cut lunch short today. Rain check? Merlin grinned. Fine by me, as long as you agree not to make me lunch ever again. Merlin gratefully tossed the remains of his wrap in the nearest rubbish bin. And you call my cooking terrible. You have no room to talk when most of your tofu creations taste like waterlogged cardboard, Arthur scowled. But there was the hint of a smile behind his eyes, and Merlin felt that stubborn spark of hope reignite. Arthur was more than a little distracted as he manoeuvred the halls to the CEO's inner sanctum. Sometimes Arthur thought his father had purposely designed the building to make his office as inaccessible as possible, in the hopes of warding off people not brave enough to run the gauntlet and thus unable to survive the full force of the Pendragon glare. Arthur, however, could walk these halls in his sleep, and so he advanced easily, through the labyrinth of twists and turns, while his mind occupied itself with idle thoughts, mostly centering on his soon-to-be ex-assistant. Though just a few days ago, the thought would have filled Arthur with a disquieting kind of dread, the situation no longer seemed as dire as it once had. Just because Merlin was leaving the company, it didn't necessarily mean that he would be out of Arthur's life. If nothing else, there was the possibility that they could at least continue to have their regular lunch meetings, something Arthur fully intended to ask Merlin about once he finished the meeting with his father. Arthur knocked on the heavy, foreboding oak doors before stepping into his father's office. "You wanted to see me, Father?" Uther looked up from his reports with a bleak expression. He stood and came around to the front of his desk. Uther hadn't addressed Arthur from behind the desk since the day he'd become an executive VP and proven himself to be the deserving heir to the company Uther had worked so hard to build. "I know I approved your plans to keep a portion of the land undeveloped, but I'm afraid I'm going to have to retract my approval." "What?" Arthur flinched as if his father's words had struck a physical blow. "It was a noble idea, Arthur, but it's just not feasible. It cuts too far into our profit margin." Arthur felt his stomach drop. "No, it doesn't have to. Read my proposal again. I looked into some new vendors and I found..." "It's still too wide of a margin, Arthur," his father said, his tone broaching no argument. "Some of the prominent investors were unhappy with the direction of the project, and we can't afford to lose them. With the economy being what it is, we need this build. If the company falls, we'll be left with nothing." Arthur refused to give up. He had too much resting on seeing this through. "There must be something we can do. We can find new investors," Arthur protested. Uther fixed Arthur with a stare as hard and cold as his voice. "My decision is final, Arthur." Arthur knew that was his warning to let it go, but he pressed on. "No, I don't accept that," he said, meeting his father's stare and drawing himself up to his full height. "I won't fail you. I can do this if you'll let me." Uther's voice was nothing short of a command. "The only thing you're going to be doing is making a public statement at the groundbreaking ceremony thanking our investors." Uther moved back towards his seat behind the desk, a none too subtle signal that the meeting was concluded. But Arthur couldn't back down. Arthur had never begged his father for anything in his life, but he came as close as he dared with his next words. "Please, Father, you can't ask this of me. Merlin would never forgive me." "I'm not asking," his father snapped, harsh and angry. "The policies of this company are not dictated by the whims of your errand boy." "Father!" "Damn it, Arthur, that's an end to it," Uther bellowed, and Arthur finally was forced to admit there was nothing left to be done. He felt his fledgling reconciliation with Merlin slip through his fingers. "Arthur, breakfast is ready. I made scrambled eggs." Well, it was egg substitute, really. But Arthur didn't need to know that. Merlin shoveled the not eggs onto two plates along with a healthy side of turkey bacon for Arthur. By the time he'd poured the juice and Arthur still hadn't dragged himself out of bed, Merlin decided it was going to be one of those mornings and got a cup of ice water to go dump over Arthur's head. But Merlin was disappointed when he went into Arthur's room to find the bed still made, apparently not slept in since two nights ago. Merlin frowned. Arthur had texted last night to say he would be out late and not to wait up, but it wasn't like Arthur not to come home, no matter how badly the meeting with his father must have gone. The flat was large, but there weren't a lot of places for Arthur to hide. That left just one possible option, however unlikely it may have been. On impulse, Merlin grabbed his jacket from the hall closet and, upon seeing Arthur's jacket was hanging alongside Merlin's, grabbed it as well, then headed for the roof. The days were still as warm as ever, but a bit of a chill had begun to creep into the early mornings, hinting that autumn was just around the corner. Merlin's suspicions were confirmed when he stepped out onto the roof to find Arthur standing there in the same clothes he'd been wearing yesterday. If he heard Merlin's approach, he gave no indication. Instead, eerily focused on the distant skyline to the south. "Arthur, what are you doing up here?" Arthur turned his head slightly at the sound of Merlin's voice, but his body didn't follow.
"I wanted some fresh air."
Merlin refrained from commenting on the unlikelihood of that statement being true, given that Arthur had repeatedly stated that he had spent loads of money on a special air filtration system so he didn't need to worry about things like fresh air. Instead, Merlin held up Arthur's jacket and Arthur slipped his hands into the sleeves with what appeared to be almost instinctive reflex. The action well practiced between the two of them, every day for the past year. The wind kicked up a bit around them and Merlin shivered. "You must be freezing," Merlin commented mildly, taking one of Arthur's hands between his and trying to rub some warmth into the frozen skin. "Arthur, your hands are like ice. Have you been out here all night?" Merlin continued to vigorously rub Arthur's hand between his, pressing his fingers to Arthur's palm as he tried to bleed some of his warmth into Arthur. Then Arthur's fingers slowly curled and twined with Merlin's. For a moment, Merlin felt a flash of heat where the skin touched. He was sure Arthur must have noticed, but when he looked up to Arthur's face, Merlin found Arthur's expression to be almost unbearably sad.
I made eggs," Merlin said lamely.
"I hope it's real eggs this time, and not those terrible fake eggs." Arthur's tone was appropriately disparaging, but that look of sadness never left his eyes. A long moment passed, and then Arthur brushed the pad of his thumb lightly over Merlin's knuckles before dropping his hand.
"What will you do with your garden?"
It took Merlin's thoughts a moment to catch up.
"Oh, well, it's technically your garden, really, so I was thinking I'd leave it here, actually."
Arthur's gaze shifted over Merlin's shoulder to fix on the garden behind him, and Merlin added,
"But you've got to promise to take care of them. The new butterflies should be emerging soon, but the flowers still need fertiliser, and water, of course, every day, and make sure you..."
"I'll hire someone." The corner of Arthur's mouth quirked up, and Merlin noticed it didn't quite reach his eyes. Merlin ignored Arthur's uncharacteristic moroseness and tried to shift Arthur's mood to more familiar territory.
"It's not like you're incapable of doing your own chores," Merlin chided. "Though I suppose you do have a tendency to muck things up if left to your own devices."
Arthur raised one haughty eyebrow.
"At least I'm not an insufferable know-it-all."
Merlin raised an eyebrow to match.
"No, you're just an insufferable prat."
This time, when Arthur smiled, it felt more real.
"I find you annoying."
Arthur's tone was so unbearably fond that Merlin momentarily lost his ability for rational speech and only stuttered,
"Yes, well, likewise."
Arthur's expression briefly brightened before settling into something a bit softer.
"I'm glad you're here, Merlin."
Merlin blinked.
"Where else would I be?"
Some of the sadness from earlier crept back into Arthur's gaze just before it shifted to once again look out over the city.
"Well, after tomorrow..."
"Oh, right. Tomorrow." Merlin instantly felt a bit silly. Of course he wouldn't be expected to see Arthur again after tomorrow. But he found he'd been hoping all the same. But this was what he'd wanted, to be away from Arthur's constant, thankless demands and his own pathetic attraction. Merlin tried to sound more cheerful than he felt as he said,
"Tomorrow, I need to look at your speech, polish your costume for the benefit, then I'll be out of your life forever."
Out of the corner of his eye, Merlin saw a muscle in Arthur's jaw twitch. A moment later, Arthur's voice was all business as he said,
"Listen, I need to tell you something. Arthur paused and chanced a look at Merlin, his shoulders slumping a little as their eyes caught briefly. I'm sorry it's been so unbearable for you these last few months. He finished, looking away again. Merlin shrugged, trying to convince himself it didn't hurt that Arthur's apology was too little too late. Not at all. I'm looking forward to going back to the smithy. I've missed it. Arthur swallowed thickly, his Adam's apple bobbing in his throat. Then, I guess it's good you'll be leaving soon. Arthur sounded like he meant the exact opposite of that. Merlin quietly echoed the sentiment. Yeah, I guess so. Arthur should have known better than to let Morgana plan the benefit ball. Someday, her extravagant tastes and love of melodramatic romance novels, which Arthur had found hidden under her bed as a teenager, was going to be the death of him. If for no other reason than the fact that he would die of embarrassment from being in her proximity. He had a sneaking suspicion tonight would be that night. The ballroom of the Camelot Hotel was done up to look like the massive banquet hall of a medieval castle, with tapestries and torches and medieval costumes and court jesters and minstrels. And how the hell Morgana had talked their father into wearing a crown for the event, Arthur hadn't a bloody clue. Arthur himself was dressed as a knight, in shining armour and chainmail. It was ridiculously heavy, but when it caught the firelight, it made him look quite dashing, if he did say so himself. Besides, he got to carry around an actual real sword all night. And he had a great deal of fun earlier twirling it around and listening to the swish sound it made as it cut through the air. Arthur eyed the absurd, completely out of place disco ball hanging from the crystal chandelier on the ceiling as it spun lazily and caused dim spots of light to go dancing across firelit tapestries. Then his gaze drifted to the figure standing under the ball, spots of light twisting over the dark hair and pale complexion of Arthur's assistant, and Arthur was suddenly knocked off his feet by a wave of blinding, naked want. Merlin was gazing about the room with the kind of big-eyed amazement that seemed to pervade his entire presence. But for once, Arthur was grateful for his assistant's constant air of distraction. He hadn't caught sight of Arthur yet, so he couldn't see Arthur staring at him in slack-jawed wonder. Merlin was wearing a simple tunic with a red silk doublet, the lacings pulled tight across his chest to fit his lean form, a leather belt wrapped around his narrow hips. Sleek black leggings melded into black leather boots that covered slender calves, and Arthur wondered why the hell he'd never noticed before just how incredibly long his assistant's legs really were. Arthur felt like he was seeing Merlin for the first time, but at the same time, there was something incredibly familiar and right about all this. Merlin's eyes found him, and a wide smile blossomed across his face. At that moment, something hidden in the back of Arthur's mind, something fundamental that had been lingering in his chest since their first meeting, finally clicked into place. Merlin caught Arthur staring and looked down at himself, then shrugged one shoulder questioningly. The small movement drew Arthur's eye to the fit of the doublet across Merlin's shoulders. But even as he felt his mouth go dry, he knew what Merlin meant by the gesture was an innocent, "How do I look?" Arthur licked his lips and swallowed hard, trying to manage any expression besides stunned awe. He allowed his gaze a few more moments, helpless indulgence, before he offered a small nod. Merlin's pleased smile lit up the room. Arthur didn't know who moved first, but the next thing he knew, they were crossing the floor towards one another, as if locked in a trance. Arthur dodging and sidestepping anyone who crossed his path without taking his eyes off Merlin, like he might disappear if Arthur looked away. Once he was within arm's reach, Arthur noticed that the lacings of the shirt and doublet were open at the neck, revealing the delicate hollow where Merlin's collarbones met. And Arthur had to stop himself from reaching out to trace the dip with his fingers, to see if the skin there was as soft as it looked. "Merlin, you look..." Arthur clamped his mouth shut on the rest of the thought in an attempt to keep himself from behaving like more of a besotted fool than he already was. Merlin's grin turned self-deprecating, and he took another glance down at himself. "It's not too much. I know you said servanty, but I figured it's a party, so..." No, it's..." Arthur cleared his throat and tried to sound as dismissive as possible. It'll do." Merlin's smile curved into a smirk as he said, "Well, you haven't seen the whole outfit," and produced a giant, red, feathered monstrosity that he promptly set upon his head. Arthur let out a startled huff of laughter, which Merlin matched, but then Arthur found himself reaching out to pull the appalling hat off Merlin's head. "Any other day, the role of court jester would fit you admirably," he said, smoothing out Merlin's ruffled hair with fingers that seemed to have developed a mind of their own. "But tonight, I think..." Arthur trailed off as his focus was captured by the silky black lock between his thumb and forefinger. He let his hand slide lower until his thumb grazed the very edge of Merlin's cheekbone, resting there. And a tiny intake of breath alerted Arthur to the fact that he'd probably taken the moment far beyond the accepted levels of propriety allowed between a boss and his assistant. But when he flipped his eyes back to Merlin's face, Merlin was grinning, wide and surprised and happy in a way that Arthur hadn't seen on him in a long time. Something indefinable swelled in Arthur's chest. The air hung heavy and charged between them, and Arthur felt his blood rushing through his veins at nearly warp speed. Merlin's gaze dropped to Arthur's lips at the same time Arthur leaned incrementally closer. "Merlin!" An unwelcome and far too jovial voice called out to them. Arthur jerked his hand away from Merlin's face, breaking the moment just as Will drew close. "My God, you look fantastic!" Will said with open admiration, passing a brief glance over Merlin from head to toe. He then had the gall to reach up and trace the fine gold embroidery near the collar of the doublet. Arthur's hand twitched before he managed to rein in the overwhelming impulse to draw his sword and club Will's thick head with the flat of the blade. Arthur flicked a look back to Merlin to find his eyes were still locked on Arthur's face. And Merlin's grin was far too shrewd for Arthur's comfort. Will finally seemed to grasp that nobody's attention was on him and said haltingly, "I'm sorry, did I interrupt something important?" "No," Arthur started, then coughed and tried to sound a little less like he'd been caught having very impure inclinations towards his assistant. "No, of course not. Just, you know, business." Merlin was still looking at Arthur with eyes that held a knowing glint, an amusement, and promise. Such promise that Arthur's fingers twitched again, this time with the desire to drag his assistant to the nearest darkened corner and do everything in his power to remove that insubordinate smirk from his face. "It's nothing we can't finish later," Merlin added. And Arthur's heart did a somersault inside his chest. "Oh, good," Will said, sounding relieved. "For a minute there, I thought you might be discussing the land development fiasco." That, apparently, was enough to tear Merlin's eyes away, to fix pointedly on Will. Arthur, however, found himself suddenly paralysed. His chest filled with cold lead, forced to watch Merlin's features as the carpet was ripped out right under his feet. "What?" Merlin asked, a confused wrinkle forming between his brows. I know it hasn't officially been announced yet, but I just overheard two of your investors discussing it. They sounded pretty relieved that the Nature Reserve donation had been rescinded. Merlin stared at Will in incredulous, numb shock for a good 5 seconds. And then his features crumpled into some bizarre mix of disappointment and fury that only Merlin could have pulled off. Then he turned that look on Arthur. It struck like a physical blow. Is that true? Arthur's stomach gave a particularly violent and painful twist because, God, it had only taken a moment for everything to come together and then fall apart before his eyes. And he would give anything, anything, to get Merlin to look at him the way he had been less than 20 seconds ago. Merlin, he said quietly, apology already forming on his lips. But Merlin just took a hasty step back, and Arthur didn't even realise he'd moved forward until Merlin held up his hands as if to keep Arthur at bay, jaw tight and eyes burning with betrayal. I can't believe you said. I told you I couldn't promise anything, Merlin. Arthur didn't even care that a panicked edge had started to creep into his voice as Merlin took another distancing step back. He reached out a hand to wrap around Merlin's upper arm, the silk warm and soft beneath his fingers. Merlin, please, let me explain. Merlin wrenched his arm away, his expression morphing into a determined sneer that looked completely out of place on his features. Don't bother, he spat. I wouldn't trust anything you had to say to me anyway. And with that, Merlin turned on his heel and stalked off, Arthur's eyes losing him as he disappeared into the crowd. Will had been standing silent witness to the whole exchange, but he chose that moment to try to take off after Merlin like some conquering hero. Arthur's hand twisted in the shoulder of Will's shirt and he wrenched Will back in place with a fierce tug. Will's eyes widened, but he stood his ground. Arthur swallowed past the angry lump in his throat and said slowly, "That was a low blow, Will." Will sneered dismissively, "Oh, come off your moral high horse. You did this to yourself. Merlin's well shot of you, if you ask me." Arthur's fist shot out and connected to Will's jaw with a solid crack. The next thing Arthur knew, he was shaking off the hands of the three men holding him back. Will was cradling his jaw like the pansy he was, and Arthur was storming away, making sure to head in the opposite direction he'd seen Merlin leave. Fuck Merlin. Fuck him and his stupid face and his ridiculous grin and his damned coffee and the way his hair curled around his two large ears and his idiotic self-righteous arse. He really was the worst bloody assistant Arthur had ever had. Arthur was lucky he was never going to be seeing Merlin again after tomorrow. Arthur was rather unsurprised when that thought didn't make him feel any better. At all. Merlin had commandeered an entire bottle of the most expensive champagne he could find and was well on his way to getting righteously sloshed in a back hallway when Will found him. Don't say it, Merlin warned, brandishing the bottle like a weapon. If you dare say I told you so, I will break this bottle over your fat head. Will raised both eyebrows. I wasn't going to say that. Yes, you were. Don't lie, Merlin countered belligerently, then downed another healthy swig from the bottle. Arthur's a liar. I hate liars. They lie. I'm glad I don't work for him anymore, Merlin concluded vehemently. Maybe if he said it strongly enough, it would make his chest stop hurting. Will held his hands in front of him as if warding off Merlin's imminent attack. All right, maybe I would, but I promise I won't. If only because you're kind of bloody terrifying right now. Abruptly, all the fight went out of Merlin and he sagged against the wall.
I thought he could be different. I thought he could be someone greater than he is. I don't know what I thought. Will settled against the wall next to Merlin, taking the bottle from his lax fingers and tipping it back to his own lips. He downed a healthy 3 swallows and passed it back to Merlin, then said, "Come on, mate, let's get the hell out of here." Arthur was not brooding. He was simply staring out the window, so he didn't start searching the room for Merlin's face. Again. He knew he wouldn't be able to take the look of hurt and betrayal he found there. It didn't matter now anyway. Arthur had bollocksed everything up quite splendidly. There would be no coming back from this. Arthur heard the clicking of Morgana's heels as she approached, and Arthur thought that only Morgana could transmit disdain with simply the rhythm of her steps. Her voice was sharp and authoritative at his back. "If you don't go after him, Arthur Pendragon, then you're an even bigger fool than I thought, and you deserve whatever misery you have to endure for the rest of your sad, pathetic existence." Arthur could think of a great deal of uncharitable remarks to make in response, but in the end, it would only prolong the torture of this particular conversation. Instead, he settled on the truth. "He doesn't want me. After what you did, I can't say I blame him." Arthur's jaw clenched. "I didn't have a choice." "You always have a choice. Sometimes you have to do what you know is right and damn the consequences." Very slowly, Arthur turned to meet her eyes. She was wearing the completely exasperated expression she used when she thought Arthur was being so utterly dense that he needed the obvious spelled out for him in bright, flashing neon letters. It was an expression she only used when she knew Arthur would be forced to admit she was right, no matter how much he hated it. As her words slowly sunk in, Arthur felt a wide, hopeful smile creep across his face. "Have I told you lately how very, very much I despise you?" And Morgana, because she understood, simply rolled her eyes and said, "God, men, it's as if you're all horribly allergic to just saying what you mean. You'd be totally useless without me, you know that." Arthur's smile widened as he felt the tightness in his chest loosen and then recoil as something very much like anticipation. He needed to find Merlin. He could still make this right. Morgana, because she was a little bit scary and omniscient, said, "He's probably up in your flat, sulking." "I guess you think this means I owe you," he mock scowled. Morgana's grin was devilish. "Make me your best man at your wedding and we'll call it even. I'll even throw you a killer bachelor party." "It's up here," Merlin called, motioning with the half-empty champagne bottle. He stumbled his way up the spiral staircase with Will close behind, which was really a stroke of luck when Merlin began to wobble backwards and Will caught him with an arm around his waist. Merlin didn't think it was strictly necessary that Will leave his hand there as he climbed the rest of the stairs, but seeing as how Merlin was beginning to see double, he wasn't opposed to the helping hand, as it were. Merlin draped his free arm over Will's shoulders, finding him surprisingly solid when he leaned in for support. When they both emerged onto the roof, Merlin gave a grand gesture and announced, "There it is." He turned to see Will, looking a bit bemused. "You know, when you said you wanted to show me something back at your flat, this wasn't what I pictured." Merlin abruptly deflated. "You don't like it," he grumbled. "Arthur didn't like it either. I thought he was just pretending, but apparently not." "Unless he really was. How should I bloody know? Arthur's a very good liar." "He's also a moron," Will supplied easily. "What he did to you, Merlin, I would never do something like that." Merlin sloppily patted Will on the back and nodded in a way that would have had him face down on the concrete if it wasn't for Will's arm still tight around his waist. "You're a good friend, Will," Merlin acknowledged gravely. Will gave a funny kind of snort and after a moment said, "In the interest of honesty, I think there's something I need to tell you." Merlin frowned and turned to look curiously at Will, slightly listing to one side. It took a few moments before he was able to focus on the side of Will's face. "I meant it when I said I see a lot of potential in you, Merlin. But it's not the only reason I wanted to hire you." Merlin blinked hazily. "Oh? I hoped, really." Will paused, then gently took the champagne bottle from Merlin's hand. After downing a healthy swallow, he turned so he was looking right in Merlin's eyes. "We have a lot in common, you and I. I was thinking we would make a very good team. Together." Before Merlin could puzzle out what Will meant, he was surprised to feel Will's mouth pressed up against his. The kiss was more than a little unexpected, but once the initial shock wore off, it was actually quite nice, really. Comforting, in a way Merlin hadn't realised he'd needed. Will's lips were soft and dry, and Merlin found himself flicking out his tongue to wet them. Will angled his head to deepen the kiss, and that's when the sound of shattering glass made them spring apart. Arthur was practically whistling by the time he made it back to the flat. He knew it wouldn't be easy, but he was convinced he could work things out with Merlin. He still had no idea what to do about his father, but he would find a way to compromise with the developers in the morning. Right now, though, he needed to see Merlin, to set things right between them, to get things back on track to where Arthur was now able to admit they'd been heading all along. Merlin wasn't in the flat, so that only left the roof. Arthur impulsively grabbed a bottle of wine from the rack, then wondered if maybe he was pushing his luck. He was going up there to work out a business negotiation, not to have some romantic rooftop rendezvous. He put the bottle back on the rack, then made it halfway up the stairs before he went back and grabbed it again, as well as two glasses. It never hurt to bring a peace offering to a negotiation. Wine and glasses in hand, Arthur raced up the stairs. He took three steps into the cool night air and froze. It took his mind several staggering tries before he was able to absorb the tableau in front of him, to register the unfathomable image of Merlin and Will in each other's arms, in what was clearly a passionate embrace. Arthur felt his heart sink like a stone into his stomach, and the bottle slipped from his fingers to shatter on the concrete. Merlin turned, startled, then felt his eyes go impossibly wide. Arthur? He stuttered in shock. Arthur met his eyes, and Merlin had already had his heart broken once tonight. It should be impossible to do it again. So how could he explain the way he felt when he saw the look on Arthur's face? Very belatedly, Merlin extricated himself from Will's arms, taking a shaky step forward and feeling suddenly very, very sober. Merlin said, "Arthur, this isn't... I can explain." Arthur turned and stormed back down the stairs to the flat. Merlin didn't even hesitate before he followed after him. Merlin caught up to him at the lift doors, where Arthur was frantically jabbing at the call button as if that would make the lift come any faster. "Arthur, please, can't we talk about this?" "I don't need an explanation, Merlin," Arthur told the lift doors. "We're both adults. I'm well aware of what sorts of activities you have planned for the evening." "Planned? What? No, Arthur, it was an accident." "What, so he just tripped and fell on your tongue then, is that it?" Arthur snapped, then jammed the call button again with a bit more force. Merlin felt his temper flare in a way that only ever seemed to happen around Arthur. It was as if the man had completely forgotten the way he'd completely betrayed Merlin's trust
only a few short hours ago. I don't see what gives you the right to start acting like a jealous boyfriend. You're the one who lied about the one thing I have ever asked of you. Not all of us can live in whatever happy fantasy land you've created inside your head, Marilyn. Some of us have to live in the real world. And in the real world, not everything works out with a pretty pink ribbon to tie it all up neatly. Things are complicated, and sometimes sacrifices have to be made for the greater good. Marilyn huffed a humorless laugh. Don't talk to me about sacrifices after wasting a year of my life working for you. You're just trying to cover your own arse. Better covering my arse than offering it up to anyone who'll take it, Arthur spat, motioning towards the roof, and presumably, Will. Marilyn swallowed thickly until he was sure he could speak without his voice betraying how much Arthur's words had hurt. Don't be like this, Arthur. You're better than this. If you would just... I'm not one of your stupid little animals, Marilyn. I don't need saving. I can't believe you're not even going to try to be the person you could be. Arthur kicked the lift door in a fit of rage and whirled on Marilyn, shouting, "This is who I am, Marilyn. I'm sorry if it's not good enough for you, but not everyone can measure up to your exacting standards." He motioned again towards the roof, just to make his point quite clear. The doors to the lift pinged open and Arthur hastily stepped inside. Marilyn's hand shot out to hold the doors open and he leaned forward to meet Arthur's eyes with a fierce stare. "I don't want perfection, Arthur. Perfection's boring. But I also don't want to work for something, for someone that I can't believe in." Arthur's eyes were furious and hurt as they met Marilyn's, but it needed to be said. "You know, Arthur, it's not entirely impossible for someone to change, even someone as pig-headed as you." And with that, Marilyn stepped back and let the lift doors quietly glide shut. Marilyn stood watching the space where Arthur had been for a long time before Will's hand settled on his shoulder. "He doesn't deserve you, you know." Marilyn blinked away the sting in his eyes and said, "Actually, that's just it. I think maybe he does. But he won't even try." Marilyn's going away party was in full swing. There was music and balloons wishing him luck and cheerful bright lettering and even cake. The only thing missing was Marilyn. The door to Arthur's office clicked shut, drowning out the sounds of chatter coming from the office party. Marilyn closed his eyes and leaned his head back against the solid wood. He doubted anyone would notice he'd slipped out of his own party. And even if they did, he doubted they'd mind. Marilyn wasn't exactly the life of the party right now. Marilyn opened his eyes and heaved a sigh into the empty office. For the first time in the past year that Marilyn could remember, Arthur hadn't come into work today. And the place felt strangely subdued, as if the glow from the fluorescent lights wasn't enough to illuminate the office without Arthur's shining presence to add to it. The flat had felt the same way when Arthur neglected to come home last night. Home. Marilyn needed to stop thinking about it like that, especially since he'd moved out all of his things that morning. Marilyn slowly walked up to Arthur's desk, tracing a finger over the edge. The polished wood grain was smooth under the pads of his fingers. Marilyn hesitated a moment before sinking into the high-backed leather chair behind Arthur's desk. Maybe it was just his imagination, but he thought he could detect a faint hint of Arthur's stupidly expensive, animal-tested aftershave lingering in the soft leather. Before he could think better of it, Marilyn picked up the phone and was halfway through dialing Arthur's mobile when he slammed the phone back into its cradle. A second later, he picked it up again and dialed Gwen. It rang 3 times, and then Marilyn didn't even give her time to stutter out a hello before he said, "I think I've really screwed up." "Marilyn?" Gwen asked, puzzled. "What's wrong?" "I've lost him, Gwen." Marilyn didn't bother to mention the insanity of losing someone he was planning to leave in the first place, But thankfully Gwen didn't mention it either.
Don't say that, Merlin, Gwen replied, ever hopeful. What's that unicorn slogan you and Lance are always spouting off about? Nothing's ever really lost as long as there's someone left who's willing to fight.
Merlin let out an aggravated sigh.
And what if I don't want to fight for him anymore? I'm not even sure I ever want to see him again.
What he did, Gwen, it was unforgivable. And then he didn't even have the guts to come into the office and face me today.
The least he could do was come in and let me call him a prat to his face.
Merlin knew Gwen heard what he meant. I didn't even get a chance to say goodbye.
I know you're angry at him right now, Merlin, but if you love him as much as I think you do, you'll find a way to get past it. I had to fight for Lance, and it's the best thing I ever did.
Yeah? Merlin was quietly hopeful.
Of course, Gwen answered.
And then there was a brief shuffle on the other end, and Merlin had to hold the phone away from his ear as Gwen gave a completely uncharacteristic shout.
I swear to God, Lance, if you leave the toilet seat up one more time, I will personally organise a hunting trip to the Serengeti.
Merlin stared at the phone in his hand with dumbfounded shock before mumbling,
Gwen, if now's a bad time, I can...
Gwen gave a rather frustrated sigh and barreled right over Merlin's protests.
Look, Merlin, if there's one thing I've learned, it's that when you're fighting with the person you love, those are the times you need to fight the hardest for that person. You can win him back. You just need to try.
Merlin thought about that for a moment. He hated how small his voice sounded as he asked,
What if he doesn't want to be one?
Gwen didn't say anything, and Merlin thought it was because she was too nice to say, Then there's really nothing you can do.
Arthur spent Merlin's last day at Morgana's flat. It wasn't so much hiding as it was strategically avoiding things he very much didn't want to deal with at that moment, like seeing Merlin's face. Of course, there was also the fact that Morgana would eventually come home, and Arthur didn't want to deal with her rather vocal disapproval. And it wasn't like he could stay away from his own flat forever.
When Arthur walked into his flat, he already knew that Merlin was gone. The flat was quiet in a way it never was, even when Merlin was sleeping. As if his mere presence vibrated the air in a different way that Arthur could sense. Before Arthur could think better of it, he found himself poised at the open doorway of Merlin's bedroom. Merlin had never had many belongings, but the room seemed emptier without everything haphazardly scattered about. Merlin's presence inflicting itself on Arthur's life with a casual type of conquest, as if he belonged from day one. But now, the walls were bare. The closet was empty, and the bed was even made. Arthur scowled at the neatly tucked corners. He hoped Merlin had at least had the decency to change the sheets after he and Will. Arthur slammed the door shut and stomped up the stairs to the roof, suddenly feeling like his own flat was suffocating him. The rooftop provided no relief, however, considering the first thing that greeted Arthur once he threw the door open was Merlin's bloody stupid garden. Arthur closed his eyes against the sight and his mind was immediately assaulted with images from the night before. Merlin's lips pressed against Will's. Will's hand curled around Merlin's hips. Merlin's mouth pink and shiny with Will's saliva. Arthur took an involuntary step back and felt something crunch under his heel. He looked down to see shards of green glass littering the roof and a red stain soaked into the concrete. Arthur towed a green sliver of glass, then viciously ground it into powder under his sole, his teeth grinding in his skull to match. In a blind rage, Arthur stomped to the enclosure and ripped down an entire wall of netting. The butterflies, idiotic as their keeper, didn't realise they were suddenly free. A few fluttered past him in an awkward, lurching arch, but most seemed perfectly content to rest lazily against the brilliant golden petals. Arthur momentarily considered the logistics of herding butterflies before his gaze caught an odd green shape hanging from one of the leaves. Upon closer inspection, Arthur realised it was a cocoon from some late blooming caterpillar who clearly didn't have the sense to realise that by the time it emerged, the temperature would be steadily dropping as the leaves changed from green to red and gold. It would be too late. Awareness, when it finally hit, ploughed into Arthur with the force of a steamroller. Merlin's voice rang through Arthur's head as if being shouted through a megaphone. I can't believe you're not even going to try to be the person you could be. It's not impossible for someone to change, even someone as pig-headed as you. Merlin may be an idiot most of the time, but there was always the rare occasion that he surprised Arthur with his insight. On those rare occasions, Arthur tended to listen. He didn't even know if he wanted Merlin back, or if he'd even had Merlin to begin with. What he did know, however, was that he'd gone back on his word and hurt Merlin deeply. He also knew that he was not the type of person who would betray a friend. He liked to think he was better than that. Perhaps it was time that he started to act like it. With one last look at the cocoon, Arthur very gingerly lifted the pot and carried it inside to the warmth of his flat, setting it on his desk like some bizarre token of inspiration. Then Arthur sat down to write the most difficult speech of his career. Merlin had his feet propped up on the cracked plastic of the break room table, his electric blue apron in his lap and a soy milk latte slowly cooling at his side. Hollyoaks reruns were quietly playing on the ancient telly in the corner, but Merlin was only half paying attention. He'd stopped following the show once John, Paul and Craig rode off into the sunset together. Lucky bastards. Gwen burst into the break room and made straight for the telly. Oi! I was watching that! Merlin protested. No, you weren't. You were sulking, Gwen informed him sternly before stopping on the channel she wanted. Merlin glanced at the screen to see Arthur Bloody Pendragon staring back at him from the televised groundbreaking, looking golden and beautiful in the sun. And Merlin promptly said, oh, no way. He half rose from his seat and practically shouted, hell no, Gwen! Scarily strong hands gripped him from behind and pushed him back down into his seat. Lancelot's voice was grave as he said, it's for your own good, Merlin. The sooner you conquer your fears, the sooner you can get back to the noble fight. Merlin sighed. He knew Lance was hoping Merlin would put his name back on the regular volunteer rotation at Unicorn, but the truth was Merlin wasn't even sure if he wanted to go back. The whole thing just seemed so pointless now. Gwen twisted the knob volume, and Arthur's voice rang out clear and strong through the break room. Thank everyone for being here today. This development will create new jobs, as well as a unique source of entertainment and commerce for families in the area. It is a step towards progress for the community, and a promise on behalf of the Pendragon Corporation to always value the people of London. Merlin let out a short, angry groan and began to stand up. But Gwen put a surprisingly strong hand on his shoulder, rooting him in place with a glare worthy of Morgana at her most terrifying. Merlin reluctantly turned his attention back to the telly and sullenly watched Arthur flip through the note cards in his hands. But to truly prove to someone that you care about them, you must also be honest with them. I learned that lesson the hard way. There was someone in my life that I was not honest with, and I hurt him very deeply. Merlin stifled his gasp of surprise. I gave my word to him that I would do everything in my power to save a portion of this land as a nature reserve, to safeguard the rare species of butterfly found only in this one unique piece of land. He put his trust in me, and I betrayed that trust. And for that, I'm sorry. Merlin tried very hard to ignore the sudden pounding of his heart hammering against his ribs as if trying to leap from his chest. But there is one thing I won't betray, and that is my duty to the company and to the people of London. For a moment, Merlin felt the swell of bitter anger rising like a lump in his throat, but Arthur's next words made Merlin swallow it back down again. It is the duty of the Pendragon Corporation to look not just to the present, but also to the future. This small slice of land should remain undeveloped, preserved for future generations of Britons. Merlin shuffled closer to the Arthur on the screen, as if the image were really Arthur, and Merlin could see if he was telling the truth just by meeting his eyes. As Arthur continued, his voice softened slightly, and it was difficult to tell on the crummy TV, but Merlin thought he saw the corner of Arthur's mouth quirk up wryly. If there is one thing this man has taught me, it is that two very different things, as different as concrete and nature, do not have to be in constant opposition. They can come together, complement each other in a way that creates something surprisingly harmonious. The Pendragon Corporation would be honoured to be a part of that. But more than duty, more than honour, it is the way we treat those we care about the most that defines us. I am ashamed to say that I have treated this person very poorly. He believed in me, and I let him down. Arthur's head dipped slightly in a gesture Merlin knew to be disappointment, the same as he knew this gesture was always accompanied by the slight tightening of the lines around Arthur's eyes. You see, this man, despite being stubborn and unwilling to compromise and having terrible fashion sense, Merlin snorted, but didn't look away. He's very like the butterflies he hopes to save. A little awkward and unconventional, often overlooked, but when you look closely, rather unexpectedly beautiful and one of a kind. Merlin didn't realise how closely he'd scooted towards the TV until he fell out of his chair and his bum hit the hard tiled floor. It didn't even faze Merlin's avid concentration on the screen. Arthur had stopped using the note cards, and he wasn't even looking into the camera anymore. He was staring off somewhere into the middle distance, his voice taking on the slightly bewildered, fond quality it always had when Merlin did something unexpectedly useful. And even though I've said cruel things and driven him away, he's become the other side to my coin. He balances me out. He makes me whole. Merlin suddenly wondered if there was some sort of air quality advisory he'd missed because he was finding it incredibly difficult to breathe. Arthur cleared his throat and seemed to come back to himself a bit. And so, we will be keeping a portion of this land undeveloped because the Pendragon Corporation values the people of London and because I value him above all else. Arthur nodded and walked off the screen amid a frenzy of noisy questions and flashing camera bulbs. Reporters on screen immediately started rhapsodising and predicting the effect on the market. Merlin stared at the screen, transfixed, but not seeing any of it. Gwen crouched at Merlin's side and wrapped her hand lightly around his elbow. When Merlin looked at her, he had a feeling the watery shine to her eyes was reflected in his own. Merlin's voice was raspy and broken, barely functional as he choked out a nonsensical, "Gwen, I..." Lancelot's keys landed in Merlin's lap. "You should take my car," Lancelot said. "It's a Prius." Merlin drove like a bat out of hell. He wove in and out of lanes and ran traffic signals with a degree of frequency that had him surprised he even made it to the Camelot Hotel in one piece, let alone without getting pulled over for reckless driving. When the lift door didn't immediately pop open the moment Merlin pushed the call button, he had to physically restrain himself from simply running up 30 flights of stairs. He thanked a mixture of sentimentality and absent-mindedness that he'd neglected to remove the key to Arthur's flat from his keyring. and a moment after he fumbled it into the lock, he was racing up the spiral staircase, somehow knowing with a certainty that was a little frightening that Arthur would be on the roof. Merlin didn't waste time to catch his breath before he threw open the door to the rooftop, sucking in great lungfuls of crisp near-autumn air as he took in the sight before him. Arthur was seated under the canopy of netting, one wall duct-taped in place. Arthur's laptop was resting on his knees and he was staring at Merlin from behind the wire-rimmed glasses he pretended not to need, unless he felt like playing at being terribly serious and mature. Merlin mindlessly opened his mouth without a clue what to say and was mildly appalled when the first thing that came out was, "I didn't sleep with Will." "Oh, way to bollocks that right up," his mind supplied helpfully. Arthur's raised eyebrows seemed to agree.
"I mean, I saw your speech," Merlin added inanely.
He was beginning to wonder if it was even possible to salvage this conversation into the mutual unrepression of emotions he'd envisaged whilst weaving death-defyingly through traffic, when Arthur's only response was to blink stoically from behind the ridiculously aesthetic frames. Merlin decided the only thing to do would be to lay it all bare. After all, it was sort of his turn. Steeling himself, Merlin took a step forward and said, "Arthur, you're the reason I get up in the morning." Arthur's eyes widened and Merlin took a shaky breath before he continued. "And it's not because I need to lay out your clothes and cook you breakfast and drag you out of bed. Although, right, that's part of it. But it's not about the job, Arthur. Not entirely, anyway. I mean, there's the running and the fetching and the washing and all that. But there's more to it than that. You're a great man, Arthur. When you're not being a great prat. And I don't want another job. I'm happy to serve you until the day I die. Or, well, I guess I would prefer it to be more like the day I receive a fairly generous retirement pension. But look, you get my meaning." Taking another step forward, Merlin felt his hands shaking, but his voice was clear as he said, "And even if I really hate this job sometimes, and I still think you're a giant prat, I don't want anyone but you." Arthur took off his glasses and set them aside, presumably to better stare at Merlin. For once, Merlin had absolutely no clue what Arthur was thinking. His stoic stare could have meant he was simply as floored by Merlin's admission as Merlin himself felt. Or it could just as easily mean that Arthur thought Merlin had gone off the deep end. Finally, when Merlin could no longer stand the suspense, he said, "Arthur, would you please say something?" After another interminable moment, Arthur looked away from Merlin's eyes and said, "I have to get back to work." Merlin blinked. "Oh." Arthur, still not looking at Merlin, said, "I have to present the new proposal to my father tomorrow morning, so..." A muscle in Arthur's jaw twitched. But other than that, his face was devoid of emotion. "Right, of course, I'll just..." Merlin made some obscure gesture over his shoulder towards the door. When Arthur gave no indication that he cared one way or the other, and continued to stare anywhere but at Merlin, still with that same inscrutable expression, Merlin just gave a half-hearted nod and turned to leave. Each step away hollowed out an aching chasm in Merlin's chest. How could he have been so wrong? He'd been so sure that he could patch things up with Arthur, that they'd both wanted the same thing. He knew that Arthur's speech had to mean something. Merlin's confession may not have been quite so eloquent, but was it really bad enough for Arthur to give up a second chance? Sure, they probably always fight like cats and dogs, but their good times would be just as fierce. They would be the stuff of legend. How could Arthur be willing to throw all that away? As Merlin slowly made his way to the door, he distantly wondered how he ever hoped to pull his heart back together when it had been shattered so completely. Merlin's hand was on the door when he was grabbed and spun around by the shoulder, and another hand was buried in his hair at the base of his skull, and Arthur was kissing him like both their lives depended on it. It only took a split second for Merlin to wrap his arms around Arthur's neck and kiss him back with everything he had. In that moment, everything seemed to slide perfectly into place, as if the only thing Merlin had ever needed for the world to make sense was Arthur's lips on his. The kiss was hot and slick and a bit sloppy, more desperation than finesse, but Merlin didn't care. He couldn't even think past the litany of yes, 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 and finally. Merlin clung to Arthur's shoulders as Arthur pressed him back against the door, practically devouring each other's mouths. It was everything Merlin wanted, but he was still frantic for more. Then Arthur wedged a thigh between Merlin's knees and pressed so close it would take a crowbar to pry them apart. And Merlin guessed it would only take another 2 minutes of this before he came in his trousers in the middle of the bloody rooftop. Summoning his few remaining wits that weren't keeled over in ecstasy from the way Arthur was biting and sucking on Merlin's bottom lip, Merlin mumbled breathily between messy kisses. Arthur, bed. Arthur made a noise that could have been approval or could have been some nonsensical cross between a grunt and a sigh. Then he crashed their hips together in a way that pressed their cocks together almost violently through their clothes. And Merlin decided 2 minutes was now more like 2 seconds. He shoved at Arthur's shoulders until Arthur released him with a frustrated groan, putting enough space between them for Merlin to suck in a shuddering breath. Arthur's look was beyond predatory, his mouth swollen and wet, and his dark eyes fixed on Merlin's lips in a way that made it clear it was taking all his willpower not to just dive right back in. And it took Merlin a good long second to remember why he couldn't let Arthur do that, at least not yet. Fixing his gaze on Arthur, Merlin repeated in a voice he barely recognised as his own, Arthur, bed. Arthur's expression shifted into a grin that was positively manic. Then he hefted Merlin aside by his hips and unnecessarily kicked in the door to his own flat. Arthur practically carried Merlin down the spiral staircase, pushing and pulling and manhandling him like the 8-stone weakling that he was. Their hands tugged frantically at clothing, hungry for skin but not willing to stop kissing or allow even an inch of space between them as they tried to touch each other everywhere at once. Just negotiating Merlin out of his t-shirt involved a tangle of jammed elbows and crushed toes, and Merlin only managed to get the top 3 buttons of Arthur's shirt undone, due to blind luck and a few furious yanks that made Arthur wince in sympathy for the fabric. Arthur was amazed they didn't manage to accidentally kill each other before they made it to solid ground. They were waylaid momentarily when Merlin stumbled into a priceless Tiffany floor lamp and sent their bodies lurching into the back of the couch, hips colliding on impact, and God, Arthur didn't even care about the lamp, shattered into 1,000 pieces, because Merlin just grunted and pressed his thigh harder against Arthur's cock. Arthur groaned and latched onto Merlin's ass, grinding their hips together. Merlin shuddered and ripped his mouth away from Arthur's, gasping hot against Arthur's neck. And because Arthur was maybe a bit of a prat and couldn't resist, he grinned against the shell of Merlin's ear and said, "That's coming out of your pay, you know." Merlin's indignant squawk could have been a protest. Or it could have been because Arthur chose that moment to bite down on Merlin's earlobe. Arthur slid his hands up the hot, bare skin of Merlin's chest and took Merlin's face between his hands, pulling him into another searing kiss and opening wide around Merlin's tongue. Merlin gave up on the buttons of Arthur's shirt and his hands dropped to fumble at Arthur's belt. Digging his fingers into Merlin's hair, Arthur shoved them both off the couch and started dragging Merlin back towards the bedroom. Despite Arthur's impatient prodding and manoeuvring and tugging, they tripped over each other's feet twice before Merlin pulled back
just enough to say breathlessly against Arthur's lips. Oh, damn it, Arthur. My ears are not handles. The backs of Arthur's knees collided with the edge of his bed as he moved his assault to the soft skin below Merlin's jaw and said, "It's not my fault you're incapable of walking and undressing at the same time. Really, Merlin, I thought you said you were good at this." Merlin glared, and the next thing Arthur knew, his trousers were undone and he was flat on his back in the middle of his bed. Merlin descended on top of him with hands shoved up under Arthur's mangled shirt and Merlin's hot mouth on his neck, and fine, yes, that was actually quite impressive. Merlin practically growled as he said, "Maybe if you'd stop being so damn pushy all the time." Arthur slid his hands down the back of Merlin's trousers and pressed his hips up, dragging their clothed cocks together and making Merlin cut himself off with a gratifying hiss. "Someone has to lead, considering you're clearly rubbish at it. You couldn't even manage my shirt buttons." With a furious heave and what could only be described as an animalistic grunt, Merlin ripped the last two buttons from Arthur's shirt. "What is it with you in destroying my shirts?" Arthur said shakily, more than a little breathless because, wow, hot. And then he let out a rather unmanly yelp as Merlin latched his mouth over one of Arthur's nipples and did something lewd and indecent and incredible with his tongue. Arthur clung to the back of Merlin's neck and arched desperately and whispered, "Oh, fuck." Because it felt like every single nerve ending in Arthur's body was suddenly connected to the tip of Merlin's tongue. I see what you mean about the tongue thing," Arthur gasped out helplessly. Arthur could actually feel the smugness of Merlin's smile pressed against his skin. "You haven't seen anything yet," he gloated. And then he began pressing a line of hot kisses down the length of Arthur's body. Before he even reached the waistline of Arthur's trousers, he was already shoving them down past Arthur's knees, boxers and all, before apparently abandoning the endeavour in favour of palming Arthur's cock and sucking the head into his mouth. Fireballs exploded behind Arthur's eyelids. Merlin's tongue deftly swirled around the head and teased at the slit. And Arthur may have made a noise in a register only audible to dolphins and household pets. Then Merlin pulled off Arthur's cock and just grinned, because he was a sadistic, cock-teasing bastard with a death wish. He let his bottom lip glide over the tip of Arthur's cock, pink and shiny and slick, then said, almost conversationally, "Do you think this is a good time to negotiate a pay raise?" Arthur fisted his hands in the sheets to keep himself from throttling Merlin, if only because it would result in the worst case of blue balls in his life. "Merlin," he warned through gritted teeth. Merlin, however, just lapped a stroke up the underside of Arthur's cock and curled his tongue against the bundle of nerves at the base of the head in a way that sent bolts of lightning shooting to the palms of Arthur's hands and the soles of his feet. Arthur bit his lip and tried not to writhe mindlessly as Merlin remarked casually, "Or maybe my own office. That would be nice." Arthur groaned and said, "I'll make you the bloody VP of cocksucking if you want. Bloody hell, just God, Merlin, get the fuck on with it." Arthur didn't have to see Merlin smirk, since he could feel it against the shaft. "You really are biologically incapable of asking for anything nicely, aren't you?" And, because Arthur didn't care one shred about his dignity, as long as he just got Merlin's mouth on him sometime in the next 10 seconds, he choked out in a voice that was perilously close to a needy whimper, "Merlin, please." And then Merlin took him in nearly to the root, and it was so good. Arthur's back arched with a wordless cry, and his heart shuddered to a stop in his chest, and his brain lit up like a fucking firecracker. Arthur abruptly came back to reality to find Merlin's hand light on his face and the other tight around the base of his cock, Merlin's voice drowning out the white noise in Arthur's head, Arthur, not yet. Stay with me. I'll be damned if I've waited all this time for you to go off in the first 5 minutes. Bastard, Arthur said, but it came out as almost a keening sob. Arthur decided that if Merlin wanted to make this a battle of wills, like everything else they did, then he wasn't above playing dirty. Grabbing Merlin's wrist, where it rested against Arthur's cheek, Arthur deftly sucked two of Merlin's fingers into his mouth. Fuck, Merlin said with feeling, his eyes gone wide and dark. Arthur's hands were shaking with need as he curled them into Merlin's hair and pulled him into a wet kiss. Merlin, Arthur moaned into the kiss, barely drawing back far enough to get the words out. We have time later. We'll go slow, just no more waiting. Arthur was sick of waiting. He wanted this so badly. Had wanted it for so long without even knowing he wanted it. And that somehow made it worse because it had been building up inside him like an avalanche, silent and overwhelming and burying Arthur until he couldn't even breathe. Merlin's breath was coming in hard, short pants against Arthur's mouth. All right, this one time, he breathed, but you owe me. Then he moved back to Arthur's cot. And this time there was no more messing around. He set a hard, fast pace, sliding his mouth up and down the shaft and fluttering his tongue in a way that stole the air from Arthur's lungs. He slipped his wet fingers into Arthur's ass to the first knuckle, and a ragged thumbnail scratched lightly over soft skin just behind Arthur's balls, and Arthur was gone. He was ripped apart and pulled back together in a span of seconds. And apparently his brain was put back together wrong because his limbs refused to move and his eyelids wouldn't open and he couldn't do anything besides just lie there and breathe. Merlin assumed, quite rightly, that Arthur was very close to blacking out and said, "Oh no, you don't, Arthur. Don't you dare pass out on me, you bloody git." Arthur distantly recognised the sound of Merlin shucking his own trousers. However, he wasn't able to do much besides let his knees fall open so Merlin could settle into the cradle of his thighs, rutting into the skin still slick with Merlin's spit. Merlin's cock was rock hard as it dragged across Arthur's, still sensitive to the point of pain, but he clutched weakly at Merlin's shoulders. He felt Merlin's hips rocking into his, pressing him into the mattress. He managed to shake one leg free of the trousers, confining his ankles, and curled his leg over Merlin's thigh, barefoot tucked against the back of Merlin's knee. It was all Arthur could do, to just lie there and moan weakly as Merlin used his body, taking what he needed, what Arthur was more than willing to give. Merlin kept making needy little noises against the side of Arthur's neck, and Arthur turned to mouth hotly at the pointed curve of Merlin's jaw, and Merlin came with a desperate cry. As soon as he'd finished, he grumbled, "I should have known you'd just lie back and make me do all the work, you lazy pawns." Arthur meant to say, "You didn't give me time to recover properly. I just had my brain sucked out through my cock. I can't be blamed for my actions." What he actually said was, He tried again, but this time with better success. "Not my fault you're so bloody impatient. Didn't even get my trousers off." "Nobody was stopping you from doing it yourself, you know." At Arthur's meaningful eyebrow, Merlin said, "What, so now it's my job to undress you too?" Arthur stared up at the ceiling and silently considered it. Merlin, unfortunately, cut short that train of thought before it even left the station. "Forget it. I'm not bloody undressing you, Arthur. At least not until you learn the meaning of reciprocacy." Arthur absolutely did not pout. "I think I liked you better with my cock in your mouth. You were actually quiet." Arthur had about half a second warning before his smirk got smothered by a pillow. If Merlin had any fears of falling victim to pattern, and being summarily kicked out of Arthur's bed in the morning,
They were quickly dispelled when he woke in the pre-dawn hours to find Arthur clinging to him like a limpet and tracing lazy patterns across his hip bone. Smiling, Merlin kissed the side of Arthur's neck and fluttered drowsy eyes open to find Arthur already awake and watching him. Arthur smiled softly. "Go back to sleep, Merlin," he said. So Merlin did. Several hours later, Merlin had a much more unpleasant awakening. He was jolted to consciousness by the sound of shattering pottery and Arthur's muffled swearing coming from the next room. Grumbling sleepily, Merlin stood and wrapped himself in the duvet because it was far too early for complex tasks like tracking down his clothes. He lurched groggily down the hall until he got to his once and soon to be again bedroom and squinted into the too bright morning sun. Arthur was dressed only in a pair of pyjama pants and crouched over something on the floor. "What are you doing?" Merlin mumbled. Arthur turned and Merlin could barely make out, "Was that dirt in Arthur's hands?" "Ah, sorry. Did I wake you?" Merlin groaned as if to say, "Yes, you bloody well woke me up at whatever ungodly sodding hour of hell this is. Now explain yourself." Merlin rubbed the sleep from his eyes with the heel of his hand and refocused on Arthur. This time he was able to make out broken terracotta shards among the small pile of dirt on the ground, and cradled in Arthur's palms was an uprooted Mortius flower. Merlin blinked at it blearily, bemused. Arthur, however, was a git, so he only said, "Well, now you're awake, you can help clean this up. Fetch a broom and dustpan." Merlin glared in a way he hoped communicated, "You know fucking well I refuse to do any work until I've had coffee. And you begged me to let you come last night. You don't get to order me around again, ever." Judging by Arthur's soft expression, however, what Merlin had actually communicated was more along the lines of, "Disgruntled puppy." Arthur rolled his eyes and sighed in a way that suggested any further interaction with Merlin would tax his patience to the limit. He grabbed the priceless and unbelievably ugly Ming vase from a nearby bookshelf and stuffed the plant into it, then replaced it on the shelf. It was only then that Merlin realised the entire bookshelf was full of the Mortius flowers from the rooftop garden. A quick glance around the room confirmed that all the plants had been moved into the room and were adorning practically every horizontal surface available. "What the?" he muttered eloquently. Arthur straightened his back and jutted out his chin in that way he always had when he was feeling defensive. "I figured if the garden was going to survive the weather, then it needed to be moved indoors." Merlin frowned. "And you decided my room was a suitable greenhouse substitute?" Arthur went back to gathering up the broken pottery shards and setting them on the shelf. "Well, it's not like you'll be using it," he answered blandly. Merlin suddenly felt as if all the air had been sucked out of his lungs. Merlin wasn't moving back in. I won't. Arthur snorted and looked at Merlin as if he was particularly dense. "Of course not. Don't be daft, Merlin." Merlin slumped against the door jamb, pulling the duvet tighter around his shoulders. "Oh," he said quietly. He realised it may have been too much to hope for, that he would get his old job back. If nothing else, they'd both proved that working with each other tended to be a rather volatile situation. So maybe Arthur thought living together would be too much after everything that had happened. He knew they'd both hurt each other, and he hadn't expected things to immediately go back to how they were, but he'd at least hoped. He'd hoped. And even if Arthur decided that it was too hard, that he just couldn't. God, if he couldn't. "Merlin," Arthur said, suddenly right there in front of Merlin and cupping his jaw between his hands and looking at him with such exasperated fondness, it was physically painful. "You really are positively useless before your morning coffee, aren't you? You won't be using it because you'll be staying with me in our room." "Oh," Merlin said, and then, "Oh." He promptly wrapped his arms around Arthur's waist and kissed him with all the elated passion he could feel lighting up in his chest. letting the duvet pull around his feet. And as he fell backwards onto the bed and pulled Arthur down with him, he saw out of the corner of his eye a jar and an empty chrysalis and a newborn butterfly spreading its wings. 2 weeks later. Merlin! Merlin was in the kitchen making scrambled egg substitute when Arthur barreled out of the bedroom door wearing only black socks, blue boxers, an undershirt and a red tie draped across his shoulders. Combined with the stormy expression on his face, Merlin thought he looked bloody ridiculous. Merlin, you daft clod, care to explain why all of my shirts are suddenly pink? Arthur shouted, brandishing fistfuls of shirts in each hand. Merlin turned back to the non-eggs to hide his sheepish grin. I may have accidentally washed your favourite red shirt with the whites. He snuck a glance at Arthur from under his lashes. He was learning just how quickly that look could get him out of trouble. It's not like you can't just buy new ones, he suggested helpfully. Arthur pursed his lips like he was holding back all the shouting he really wanted to do. After a minute, he simply let out in a frustrated huff. Worst assistant I've ever had. Why did I even put up with you? Merlin smirked. I can think of a few reasons. He cocked one eyebrow and licked his lips. Arthur's gaze caught on Merlin's mouth as Merlin ran the tip of his tongue slowly over his bottom lip. Arthur narrowed his eyes and dropped the shirts to the floor. Right, just so you know, when my father asked why we're late to work again, I'm blaming you. The next thing Merlin knew, he was being hiked up onto the granite countertop as Arthur devoured his mouth. And all Merlin could think as he stripped Arthur of his shirt was, oh, kitchen. Haven't done this one yet. Later that morning, much later, but Merlin couldn't really bring himself to feel guilty about it. Merlin gulped down the last of his coffee and trailed after Arthur as they scurried into the office. Of course, Arthur wouldn't call it scurrying, because Arthur Pendragon did nothing but stride purposefully. Arthur was so busy spouting off a list of errands for Merlin that neither of them noticed Morgana waiting impatiently outside Arthur's office. Where have you been? You've kept Kanan waiting for over an hour? Relax, Morgana. I doubt he'll mind, considering he's waiting for us to finalise crushing his pathetic little company into the ground. Fine, just hurry up, would you? As she turned to go back into Arthur's office, she gave him a quick smirk and said, by the way, pink suits you. Arthur scowled, then turned to Merlin and said, and before the end of the day, you'll need to go buy me an entirely new wardrobe to make up for the laundry fiasco. Merlin rolled his eyes. Right, I'll just pencil that in between our lunch meeting and my battle to the death with the bloody copy machine, shall I? The corner of Arthur's mouth quirked up in a reluctant grin before his expression shifted into the slightly mischievous one Merlin had just begun to recognise in the last 2 weeks. Speaking of pencilling things in, meet me on the 18th floor supply closet in an hour. Merlin's eyebrows lifted and his voice dropped to a low murmur. I thought you said you wanted me on your desk this afternoon. Arthur's grin was a little wicked as he leaned in and brushed his lips over Merlin's. I don't see why we can't do both. Merlin couldn't help but smile into the kiss, which turned into a ridiculous giggle when Arthur rather unsubtly groped Merlin's arse through his trousers. Morgana's voice called out from Arthur's office. You have just lost all future mocking privileges. At least I never put on a show for the staff. No, you just watched them put on a show for you, Arthur replied, reluctantly releasing Merlin and heading towards his office. Which reminds me, Merlin, make sure you disable the supply closet security camera. Merlin couldn't be sure, but he thought he saw a brief disappointed pout cross Morgana's face. Once Arthur and Morgana had headed to the meeting, Merlin watched them go and then headed to the office right next to Arthur's, unable to wipe away the goofy grin he'd had plastered on his face for the last 2 weeks. It only broadened in surprise when Merlin caught sight of the small framed picture sitting on his new desk, surrounded and half hidden by the unicorn figurines he'd never quite been able to throw away. He picked it up, feeling his heart melt into a stupidly mushy, warm puddle in his chest. It was a picture of a rose, in full bloom inside a simple black frame. And underneath the rose, the caption read, "Destiny. You were meant for me, perhaps as punishment." Merlin smiled, then set about settling into his first day as the Pendragon Corporation's Vice President of Environmental Relations. Oddly enough, Merlin's new job still involved a great deal of washing Arthur's socks. End.